everybody. Justin Bell here on Drive to Win, presented by The Win Las Vegas and brought to you by Mobile One for the love of driving. My guest this week, I'm really excited about, and I've been talking about it on social media for about 10 days, is Zach Brown, the valiant leader of McLaren Racing and CEO of that very large organization. He'll be joining us. He's already back in the UK. I saw him at Long Beach on Saturday. So these guys really do travel. But talking about travel, what did you think of the Grand Prix in China? Not if you just isolate the race like the world's best race, but if you look at it as holistically, the sum of all its parts was actually quite good. There was enough intrigue. And of course, being a sprint format weekend, the first one of the year, you actually had so many things in play that it made it quite riveting, quite well worth staying up so late to catch the action over there. I've got to say that there is a phenomena that happens when you are the local driver. It's your own country, your home country, and you're performing in front of your home fan base. And it really is something extraordinary. It almost gives you wings. Now, not the Max Verstappen kind of wings where, you know, they're like a fighter jet or a hawk or a golden eagle, but just the kind of wings that really brings out the best in a driver on home soil. There's so many examples of that when you look at like the British Grand Prix. Damon Hill used to perform well there. Nigel Mansell, David Coulthard, Jenson Button. It really brings out something special. And when Max goes home to race in the Netherlands, as if he needed to have any more advantage, the home turf advantage really does bring out something special. And, in Japan, we saw it with Yuki Tsunoda. I mean, what a run he had. And then Zhou Guanyu, to see him in qualifying, a great run, strong race, huge cheers from the crowd. Everything he did, you know, even the announcers were saying, they'd be like, oh, what was that? Something must have happened. Someone went off. No, it was just, the Chinese driver pulling off an overtake. The crowd were like apoplectic about it. So I just love to see it. And of course, tears at the end. It must be so emotional. When he started his Formula One career, there wasn't even a race in China. Hadn't been for 5 years. So just wonderful to see. So I wanted to mention that. 5 years since they raced in China, and a lot has happened. And definitely the culture of the sport has just increased over there. And it's a very vibrant and important marketplace for everyone involved commercially. Now, being a sprint race weekend, you can just tell the drivers are relatively dismissive of it afterwards. It's like, I did okay in that. I just need to do it in the main race. And we've seen many, many instances of this. Like, Oscar Piastri won a sprint race last year, the first McLaren to do so. And I know Lando wish it was him, but it doesn't really count on the same, historic scale of what went on, but certainly very well worth mentioning. So I'm going to give you a quick summary of the way I interpreted the sprint race, because so many things happen. Before I do, the qualifying for the Grand Prix was outrageous. I just loved it. To see the rain come down in Q3, to see as an ex-driver, I can tell you, the way they were driving, it throws all the textbooks out of the window. They're seeking for grip. They're going around. If you see them run wide and high in corners, you go, well, they're 20 feet from the apex. Often that's because the water's running down from the edge of the track and it's a drier line. You're seeking grip and trying to get the car pointed straight so you can hammer the gas. So we saw driving that some of these guys probably haven't done since they were in karts. And I always think about it to myself. I always look out for the driver from Finland or, Iceland, wherever they drive, sideways since birth. And it's always interesting, even though his car isn't up to much half the time, to see Bottas drive when the conditions are poor or drive when the track is slippery. He always rises to the top in the early part before everyone finds their feet. It's definitely just a genetic thing. And they always do so well. So I thought it was really fun. And I was on the edge of my seat watching that all come together. So, but my summary of the sprint race is thus. It was pole for Lando Norris, but it quickly turned to dust because he was side by side with a flying Lewis Hamilton to turn one. But as they held each other around the side, he ran off track and really never regained form. And then Lewis in the lead of a Formula One race. How often do we say that? Not recently, not enough, but it does sound good. With Alonso pushing him at every turn, just sounds like the good old days. Seven laps in, of course, Max worked out whatever was ailing him in his Red Bull and passed Fernando and started his familiar stalking of his prey. Now, understeer was marking, making Lewis's Mercedes. They, over here in NASCAR, they'll call it hunt like a dog, which means you cannot find the apex. You turn the wheel and you're not getting the same turning ratio from the front wheels, which makes it so slow in slow corners. He eventually locked up, ran wide, which gave Max the chance to close within DRS. And of course, that great radio message when the number 44 engineer said, hey, you know, there's a time difference to charging Verstappen behind. And Lewis said, leave it to me, mate. I can see him, which I thought was quite funny. Game over. Max swooshed past, pulled away 1.1 seconds per lap. And from third to seventh, it was a fast-moving train, though, that was really fun to watch. Some pretty sexy stuff as the Ferraris and Sainz fought side by side with Alonso. It did unfortunately end in Spanish tears for those two because they outplayed each other, but it allowed Perez some cheers, really, as he slipped past between them. And it was just fantastic to watch. Of course, very opportunist, exactly what he should be doing. But the fight that the two guys in red cars did together had me holding my breath. And they got into a scrap that really gave us a little insight into how things could evolve over the season and how quickly team bonding can come undone. Really nail-biting stuff. Obviously, Charles, in the end, did get past Carlos. The podium, therefore, was in the sprint race, Max, Lewis, and Perez. Yes, Lewis Hamilton on the podium, and it just sounded so good. And unfortunately, not a foreteller of the race that was to come the next day. But it, in many ways, it did set the scene just on the blinding, blistering Red Bull pace. So that was the sprint race. It actually added some dynamics for a change, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed seeing them out there. I enjoyed seeing every part of it. But obviously, lining up on Sunday early in the morning here in California, it was time for the main race. I'm going to save some of my questions and my thoughts on it for when Zach comes on. But in first place, Max was Goliath to 19 Davids who could not go near him. He was so strong and dominant. It was ludicrous, actually. It's his fourth win in five races. And in a way, this was where Red Bull showed their true hand, in my opinion. It was so dominant that when they doubled their pit stops, one pit stop was 2.1 seconds. The next one was 2.0, the fastest of the race. It was also an interesting stat that he won both races by a margin of just over 13 seconds. And that, to me, is important. Why it was like 13.2, 13.6, it seems to be an optimum number, and it can't just be coincidence that when he pulls out during a race, that is the window by which the team have and the strategists have worked out. That is enough for him to come in and get out in case there was a problem in the pits. And that's just what I think, because I feel that it's not coincidence. I think it's statistical evidence of just how in control they are of the pace. And do you know what? He's won 50% of the races since the last Chinese Grand Prix. So there aren't enough adjectives. It was the most dominant race, the most dominant display. And he could even sod around and have fun at the end. I think he said to his engineer, unless it was an Instagram story, which, you know, but it was a good one, that he was like, look at me going sideways at the end. Look at the data. I mean, that's supreme confidence. Anyway, he won. And he won. I think that's where it's going to go pretty much the rest of the year. Lando Norris finished second on the podium. Can't wait to get Zach's emotions about it. But what a drive, driver of the day. I mean, he took the lead in that strategy game that saw him have this excellent one-stop pit stop. You could see it unfolding. You could see the way they were planned. You know, they knew they'd probably have safety cars. They had one. It was a well time for them. They pushed hard, kept their pace ahead of Sergio in the second Red Bull. And I think it just shows his experience in the car that he is at the moment. You know, I mean, it's his eighth second place. So he's obviously just driving out of his skin. And seventh in the last 18 races. I mean, I think he was surprised by his pace. And I know that when Lando Norris, I think I said it a few shows ago, when his confidence goes up, he he's going to start to have his own version of the Max Factor. He's going to be pretty unbeatable. So in his own way, for that position. Sergio Perez rounded out the top three again, second time for him on the on third place of the weekend. A strong run. I mean, he should really have been second. That's his job, like he has been in the last few races. And it is really, for me, a reflection of quite how fast Lando actually was. But here's the tale of the tape. 6 tenths slower than Max for half of the race at the beginning. 6 tenths, my friends, is an enormous amount of time in Formula One. And that's the reality. But I'm sure, I mean, he doesn't want to offer them the chance, but I'm sure Perez is like, well, why don't you lot have a go then? I mean, this is Max Verstappen in a Red Bull. So quite extraordinary. But he's just too far back to make any opportunity in the safety cars. No way to make that up. So in a decent third place. But there was something on social media this morning, Christian Horner saying, we just have to keep the pressure on Sergio. He has performed well, but he cannot drop off. And I think that was a fair warning to their number two, whose contract is up any minute. Just outside the top three, Charles Leclerc in the Ferrari just did not have the pace to fight for the top three. But he must be really finally pleased to finish ahead of his teammate. And he was pretty aggravated by the pressure put on him by Carlos, but they did very civilly discuss in social media terms anyway. I don't know what it was like in the motorhome, but just to see the way they ran together, man, I loved it. I love seeing, there's an edge, there's something, another ingredient when you see teammates that close, and it really does, it does show. But of course, for Sainz, who finished fifth, he had those a few racy moments, but didn't quite get the tires or the strategy right. And I wonder how it is from his point of view. You know, is it the start of the end of the little bromance they enjoy? And again, I can't wait to ask Zach about this, but there is that moment, that divergence, as I say, when you're going to start to be shut out and in the middle of things, when you're leaving the team at the end of the year, but there's still 20 odd races to go, or 19 races to go. And he needs to audition for his next job. And I'll tell you what, he pushes every way. But is he racing Charles harder than anyone else? That's what I was thinking to myself. I think he is. I think he pushes everyone hard, but he's definitely going to stick it on the outside, hold those difficult high G lines around the outside. And mark my words, this is just going to intensify. It's going to be great. George Russell was sixth, probably where the car belongs. That's all I got to say. I know they got updates in Miami. He is consistently performing ahead of his teammate Lewis a lot in the races and out qualifying him. So I'm sure he's probably pretty happy with that. But a man who is always pushing in seventh was Fernando Alonso. I mean, he did qualify right up there in third. His tire choice wasn't the best, dropped him back. But I always like it when you see him come out of position because you know that he fights like he was in karting. And he just never gives up. It's quite extraordinary to witness. And I'm sure that if he gets ahead of you, you know, when they come out of the pits after a pit stop and you can see one of the other cars coming down the straight, and they must be like, are you kidding me? Fernando's in front, because he just knows, almost with like a sublime sixth sense, he knows where to place his car. He knows how to almost, you never see him doing an outrageous block. He just puts his shoulder in, puts his place car in the right place. It's quite remarkable to see how he does it. There was that moment though, just as a reflection of how hard he pushes, quite near the end when he came out of that last corner and he got his tire just in the dirt and was on full tank slapper opposite lot as he came off the curb, but still held it together. You could say that's just good reactions. It's more than good reactions. It's extraordinary skill and good reactions and good luck. But we have seen other drivers lose it and bin it in the wall for a lesser slide. And he just kept his foot in it. And just seconds later, he was overtaking Hamilton for position. Maybe that renewed 2 year plus Aston Martin contract, he's sticking with them. I think it was a great thing that he has locked that in. It gives him security and he hints obviously at a larger role within Aston Martin moving forwards. I think he's just going to be more formidable, but who will be his teammate? That's what we're going to find out. I don't think it would be Lance. Let's see. In eighth place, Oscar Piastri, he got caught up in that concertina incident. We'll talk about that in a minute. Into the hairpin after Alonso locked up and basically had to drive the rest of the race with a compromised rear diffuser on the car. And I don't think it was great, but that was a strong result. And I do think if you talk to anyone that knows him, he's such a diligent, focused, aggressive, talented guy. Doesn't seem to distract himself with too much of the other rubbish that goes on. So when it's only his second year, guys, and he had took a year off before this. So I think before last year, I think you're going to find him really coming on towards the end of the year. Lewis Hamilton in ninth, awful qualifying, awful. Totally, he didn't even get out of Q1. But like he does, that grind, he works his way, solid strategy, got him into the points. And as you heard him on the radio, he hated the tires. He does get very negative on the radio. I think that's his way. I think I said this before. That's his way of sort of softening what's going to happen. So that way it kind of looks better when it comes together. But yeah, he must be looking for a lot more. He must be looking at those red cars going, this time next year, I wonder if I can be on the podium. And in 10th, Nico Hülkenberg, what a great run. Great for Haas. It's the third time in 5 races they've been in the points. Haas definitely doing a great job. And obviously under, the new team management, I think they definitely seem to maybe have a bit more structure. I think that must be what's happening. There was so many questions about bringing the Hulk back into Formula One. And there were many other options, but it does seem that he's proving his worth. And I really like it. He's good in qualifying, gets into the top 10 and is bloody hard to pass. So that really makes him have a job well done. It's really nice when you see the little round red Haas logo on the left-hand side of the scoring screen, that they're getting up there. So let's mention the stacking up into the hairpin that occurred. Maybe whoever was the cameraman, whoever was in tape playback, Formula One on the TV broadcast side deserves a special medal for this, because instantly they were showing a replay in super slow-mo that was, I could just have it as my screensaver. It was fantastic. Obviously, when you're at the front of the pit, the group, you are entitled as the pace setter to control that pace. You stack everyone up so you can bolt like a rabbit. Bolt like a hare, I think is the right phrase. And that's how you may ensure you hold your position. And that's what Max is entitled to. And hairpins are the perfect thing to do. And effectively, you always back people up. You don't necessarily hope they're going to hit each other, but it definitely has that concertina effect. So he started that. Alonso locked up. And we saw as he whistled, stage left, Russell was super close behind. Piastri was even closer. And it was just too much for Ricciardo. And he clipped the McLaren diffuser. And then Stroll just piled in the back, lifted him up. Think of the strength of that nose cone to totally lift up the rear of the Formula One car in front. It was wild to see them go past. And a lot of damage done to both of them. Is it just an accident that any of us could have? It could happen to the best of them. But Lance isn't the best of them, is he? And he's on board. He was probably looking for an opportunity. He was looking, as Daniel said, looking towards the apex, not really lifting off, and smacked in the back. We've all done it. No insurance companies involved in this situation, like on the 405. But, very disappointing, and I think everyone very pissed off. It was unfortunate because actually Daniel has been having a stronger return to form and really needed to show his worth in the Formula One paddock. So I think that's some of his frustration, right? It's not just getting hit. It's that he took him out from being able to show what he had to do at a time he had to do it. So in some gossip, I guess Alonso locking in his drive at Aston Martin has created one more locked-in definitive moment in the driver's market since Lewis did his thing. But the question mark still is, where is Carlos Sainz going to go? And it does sound like Audi is a great long-term option and a lot of money. With Helmut Marko saying that they can't match that. Is that gamesmanship? Maybe it is, but it certainly had the right effect because it puts a bit of pressure on. But where do you see him? I personally really like the Red Bull option. I just think it would be really enjoyable to see a guy with his personality. I think he's manly enough to stand up to Max. Is he Max? No one really is Max right now. But I think it would be a good thing. That's my personal opinion, even if it's only in my head. And as for Daniel Ricciardo and Logan Sargeant, is enough enough, guys? I don't know. I there's a lot of openness amongst the media. All the, you know, the Formula One stalwarts are now turning their attention onto it, and they're being, you know, where they've always been a little bit diplomatic with the whole Stroll situation. No, it doesn't. It seems like it's game over now. And should they take the Nyck de Vries example from last year and just, you know, take him out, take them out, and give Liam Lawson a chance? Because Liam is in every single shot when they go to the pit lane there in the RB Visa Cash App team box. And it's, you know, not about money, is it? It's about getting the right guy in the seat. And I'm sure Liam's at every race with his lucky underwear ready to get in the car. Remember that at Williams, though, Logan, his family, friends, backers bring about $28 million apparently to the team. So I think that the thinking at Williams might be, why would we go with someone else when we have that much money coming in from our second driver until our cars are better? Chicken and egg, I have a feeling. Concours is back for 2024. One of the world's most prestigious automotive events takes place November 1st through the 3rd at Wynn Golf Club, right here at the Wynn Las Vegas. It's a one-of-a-kind immersive experience. The Las Vegas Concours is an exhibition featuring more than 250 distinctive automobiles from around the world. And believe you and me, it's paying homage to the remarkable cars of the past, present, and future. A celebration of heritage, craftsmanship, and innovation, the Las Vegas Concours at Wynn Las Vegas brings car enthusiasts from all corners of the globe to revel in automotive excellence, all set against the beautiful, dynamic backdrop of the Las Vegas Strip. And who will you find emceeing and hosting the event? Well, of course, on stage, doling out the heavy hardware to this year's winners. It's me, of course. So come and say hi this November. And for more information regarding the recently added rooms and packages, you can visit lasvegasconcours.com. That is lasvegasconcours.com. See you there. Well, that was a lot to get in, a lot of thoughts swirling around my head. But it was, as I said, a great weekend in a lot of ways. So much to talk about. But now I'm really excited to bring on our guest for the second time. Zach Brown was my first guest when we kicked off Drive to Win last year. CEO of McLaren Racing, born in California. He became a very successful racing driver himself all around the world, and then became the guy redefining the commercial side of motorsports. Became CEO of McLaren in 2015. He's just renewed his contract well into the future, which means the team is in the best of hands for the foreseeable future. Still a huge historic car collector and all around a true car guy. Welcome, Zach. Welcome to the show.
My pleasure. Good to see you in Long Beach. And back here in the UK, and not long before I'm back on a plane.
No, I know. I was... When you were standing up there and we were walking to watch the start of the IMSA race, you were obviously pissed off about the qualifying. It was a good weekend overall, though, wasn't it? I mean, Lando in second, and then you had 10th and 11th at Long Beach. I mean, that's a lot to process.
Yeah, the second in China was a lot better.
Yeah,
and Oscar 8th, you know, and Oscar would have had a stronger race, but he got his diffuser was broken halfway through the race when Stroll hit. Daniel hit Oscars, so overall a really strong China. Long Beach was definitely a disappointment. Qualifying is not where I expect our team to be, especially after being fastest on Friday. I would say the one good takeaway was Teo is a hell of a racing driver. He did a great job. So Pato and Alex came together, well, more like Pato came in together with Alex, unfortunately, which got Alex a flat and Pato a drive-through, so they had to recover from that. And Teo just kept making one pass at a time, keeping his nose clean and drove like a pro, and the team enjoyed working with him. So I would say that was a highlight of the weekend for us.
Yeah. Well, before we dive a little bit into China, because obviously I want to talk about Formula One, I was watching the race on Sunday. I obviously watched it delayed. I wasn't going to stay at midnight. I watched it at 7 in the morning. And I was sitting there on my couch going, I wonder how Zach connects to the team. So do you have some like uber high tech encrypted way of following what the team is doing, or are you just watching the Formula One app? What are you looking at?
I've got a very cool Dell laptop that is effectively a pit wall. So on pit wall, I have two screens where I have, we've got 1,000 different things we can look at, but I have 8, which I look at, 4 at top, 4 on the bottom, different data, different viewing in cars, audio, et cetera. So I have to toggle between two screens because obviously I only have one screen, but I get the audio. It's effectively like I'm sitting on pit wall. So I did that live, and then we always debrief an hour after the race. Mm. So my Saturday night, technically Sunday, went till about 4 in the morning. So I was a bit worn out come race day.
I'm glad you said that, because I just knew you'd have to be. Obviously, you have these incredible technology partners like Dell, so that makes sense. You'd do that. But let's talk about that data. I can only imagine. I've been involved in racing my whole life, but every year the amount of data that you have to work with increases exponentially. But of course, data is only as good as translating it, right? And distilling it. And I remember talking to our dear, you know, great friend Gilles de Ferran about, you know, what that's like in Formula One. He said it's 10x on any other form of motorsport or what we do. But part of the challenge is managing that data. Is that really where, like, Andrea Stella has been great for the team in controlling that flow of data to improve things?
Yeah, and there's a kind of a variety of data that you get. And this also then comes into some of our partners, and I'll kind of give you some examples. So we have 300 sensors on the race car. We go down to 200 sensors on race day because we want to save weight. Those sensors are pulling down 1.5 terabytes of data a weekend. I never knew what exactly that meant. So I told my IT team, like, yeah, well, it's, and I was like, but how much is a lot? It's 10 million documents. So then you go, okay, that's a lot of data, 10 million documents. So that's the amount of data that we're pulling off the car. Then in the good old days, you'd have that data and you'd have all humans deciphering that data and what data is relevant. Now we lean into some of our tech partners, the Alteryxes, the Google Clouds, where they can do things like look at everyone's tires and pick out the anomalies. So we don't have to sift through tons and tons of tire images. We can now rely on our technical partners to go show us when you see flat spots on cars, as opposed to going through each one. So we continue. That's why we have so many tech partners. And I think why tech partners like being in Formula One is they can use their technology to help us go racing. Ultimately, all that comes up to Andrea Stella, but it doesn't come to him directly. It'll come from Hiroshi, who's in charge of tire management. It will come from Randeep, who's in charge of race strategy. It'll come from the engineers talking to Lando and Oscar. So he ultimately has about 8 people in his ear that all have different types of data, weather, reliability, competitor, et cetera. And then ultimately he and the team have to make decisions on when to pit, what tire to use, how hard to push, when to push. So it's quite a sophisticated operation.
It is, but also, even we're using AI, even using these partners, in the end, you have all that data. You've got that guy behind the wheel, right? The most vulnerable point between the steering wheel and the engine. And they have their opinion too. And you've raced so long, and so have I, and you know there is also something that goes on when a driver is telling his engineer there's something wrong or these tires are just not feeling right. Only he really knows that. And I like the way they say on the radio, front right's graining, I feel something's happening, you know, can you look into it? And you just, I just have this image as that radio transmission stops, a cascade of stuff happens, right, with all your engineers to validate that or disprove that.
Yeah, most of the time the driver's right. Now, what the driver doesn't know is what else is going on around them. So there's a real trust and relationship between, you know, listening to the driver. And, you know, we always listen to them, but actually acting on it versus taking what the driver says as another data point. So when you amalgamate all this data, it's like, well, here's what we're seeing on tire wear. Here's what the data is showing us others are doing. And here's what the driver's saying, because what the driver may or may not know is, hey, my tires are falling off. But he may or may not know, depending on how close he is to other cars, their tires might be falling off even worse. So he might be going, give me a fresh set of tires, I want to pit. But that might not be the right strategy because he doesn't know what the others are doing. So he's another very important data point, an example of when we listened to the driver, but we made the mistake was in Russia. Lando was leading. It was the weather was starting to go. Lando thought he could hold on, but he didn't know what was happening 2 miles down the road on the radar. We did. And so we got kind of caught up in Lando wants to go for it, but we had more information than he had. He was giving us feedback based on the corner he was in. He didn't know it was pouring rain 2 miles down the road. So we have to be careful to, of course, always listen to him, but also recognize, and the drivers recognize, we're sitting on more information. So we take his information and we make a collective decision.
Which is why they're really pissed off when you get it wrong, right? They're like, I'm driving. I'm fighting for my life. And you guys have got...
I'm doing my job. Do yours.
Yeah, right? I mean, I know that's where you have to step in sometimes and manage. Last year, on the first episode of Drive to Win, you were my first guest. And arguably, you'd admit that the team wasn't in the best shape at that point. You know, you were not the first, second, or third best team at the time. By the end of the year, my God, what a role reversal. And then we have Lando finishing second, as you say, Oscar right up there too. So much improvement for the team. And I know you're all fighting outside the Red Bull window, but it's so important with the investment, with the sponsors, and to know you put the right team together. What do you attribute, you know, the current, it's not just pace, it's not just the pace of the drives, it's everything, isn't it? Formula One's a collection of all the parts.
Yeah, it's people at the end of the day. We made a few changes in senior management last year. So out of, call it, 1,000 people, we changed 3 or 4 of them. So still the same 997 people that gave us the car at the beginning of the year, that gave us a great race car the second half of the year. The difference was Andrea Stella is a leader of the team, is an awesome leader. He brought real clarity, did some restructuring, led by example, and ultimately the people turned it around. You know, yes, we now have new wind tunnels, simulator, things of that nature, but that didn't impact last year's upgrades. It was just, you know, Andrea and his leadership team getting more out of the people and the resources than we had than previously, and it was a awesome turnaround.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's wonderful to watch. But, okay, so I'm sitting there watching the pit stops, and there was that crazy moment when Red Bull double stacked their cars. They came in, it was a 2.1 and then a 2 flat second stop. And I thought to myself, that's not about Max, right? That's not about how good he is. That's not about how good his car is. They're just so bloody good in the pits. And I was thinking, there must be moments when you go, come on, guys. And the crew chiefs and the car, you know, chief must be, you know, it's like a sports team getting together. And then you guys popped in a 2.1 on Lando's car as well. And I was like, that must be that a sense of pride, inter-team competition between the mechanics. That's got, they train for it, right? Very hard. But pit stops are a moment to gain. And is it frustrating when they don't get it right? You're like, what was a 3.2 second pit stop?
Well, yeah, it's always frustrating whenever you don't get anything right, whether it's a pit stop or a tire compound choice or a driver locks a brake. I would say, you know, the team, it's awesome, these pit stops. And we're, it's one of our strengths. We've got, I think we're the second quickest in pit lane. So it's not just about the pit stop itself. It's about the driver getting in and out of the pits as well. And, but yeah, no, to your point, Red Bull is an awesome team. So they've got Max is doing an awesome job. And clearly, it's an awesome car. They've got awesome reliability. They've got awesome pit stops. It is an awesome team.
But it's nice when you guys can, you know, hold the record for the fastest pit stop. I bet that gives the guys on the shop floor just as much as a win, right? Sometimes.
For sure. Now,
for a short period of time.
Yeah, that'll be a hard time to beat, but you know, all lap times are beatable. All, you know, there's no such thing as a perfect lap, as you know, there's no such thing as a perfect pit stop. So I think it'll be hard to beat, but you know, who knows? Let's see.
So it said on the broadcast, you're bringing upgrades to Miami, which I know Lando's talked about as well. I mean, you have to react in Formula One so quickly to evolving circumstances, but you also have this long-term strategy. Is everyone looking forward to what you're bringing to Miami?
We are.
Yeah.
Always a little element of being nervous because, you know, the data tells you one thing and you hope it correlates the racetrack. Great news is our last handful of upgrades have done exactly what we thought they would. So there's no reason to believe these upgrades won't have that same impact. And so we're excited. Difficult weekend with it being a sprint. That's kind of not the most ideal way to roll out upgrades because you do want to kind of get to some back-to-back comparisons. Or if you have an issue, you don't have, you know, really time to make any adjustments. So rolling them out of the sprint race, that's a street course, is a little less than ideal, but hey, you know, you got to take risks in this business, calculated risks, and we're ready. So we're going to bring out the new bits and see what extra lap time we can put on the car.
Yeah. Miami's always a good show. So you have these two great drivers. I mean, they're great talent. They've got great personalities. Lando is obviously a bit of a cheeky chap, and you can see he's got the strut and he's got his thing. And I love his radio transmissions and stuff. I love his social media. Oscar's a bit more reserved and quiet. But you're such a people person. You understand the dynamics of humanity. What were you looking for when you hired them? Because you had the choice of everybody.
Yeah, you know, first and foremost, you want the fastest two racing drivers in the world. And I think we've got that. I wouldn't change either of our two drivers for anybody because they're the complete package. So you want to make sure you think you can win races with them in world championships. And I think we can. Then you look at, you know, how do sponsors feel about them? You know, are they good guys? Are they people like to be around? And then, you know, their teamwork mentality, you know, so much of a successful racing team or any business for that matter is about culture and about people and people getting along and trust. And, you know, the drivers are the leaders of the team. So everybody wants to, with great drivers, you get, you know, better mechanics and engineers because people want to work for the winners. And so I think we've got a great combination of age and experience. You know, both of them are young, and Lando's now, I think it's fifth, sixth year, and Oscar's in his second. So I think we've got a great combination. They get along great. Partners love them. Fans love them. Team loves them. And they're very fast.
They're very fast. Do you think that some of the delta between Lando and Oscar is literally Lando's relative experience right now in handling the demands of Formula One? It's not just pace. Is that what it is? Is that what we're seeing?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's experience. These tires and race management is very difficult. So if you look at Oscar's qualifying, he's very close to Lando and out-qualifies him. And in the race, you know, he still has a little bit of work to do, but it's less about out-and-out pace. It's about tire management, and that's something that you really just get with experience. So Lando has a kind of a 5-year head start on him, so it's to be expected that Lando's race craft and race management and tire management, given his experience, would be a little further ahead. But I think Oscar has shown that he can beat Lando, he can out-qualify Lando and run him very close. So I suspect as Oscar gets that experience, he and Lando will be right next to each other.
Yeah, because history has shown that, you know, and you love the sport of Formula One so much. We've seen some rivalries, inter-team rivals that went really upside down, didn't they? And caused a lot of stress for people in your position. And now we have social media. So we know everything about these guys and we see them hanging out and doing this. I'm sure there's a few old school guys that think that's dangerous territory to be like such good friends, but they spend so much time together and they carted together. And so it's really nothing new for them to be mates in a way and then go fight tooth and nail on track, right? I mean, I think, is that just the new status?
I think they're mates, but they're only mates at the racetrack. So they get along great, but I don't ever see them kind of going out to dinner on their time off. So I think it's a very strong, very good professional relationship, which is exactly what you want. I think they very much like each other, but I don't think they're going over to each other's houses on Saturday night because they do want to beat each other, but they also know that they can help each other. So you're right. I mean, you've seen a lot of teammate explosions. From the outside looking in, it looked to me like the team bosses maybe didn't necessarily get involved quickly enough. So, you know, we make sure, because we know we've got two competitive animals, that there is going to come a day where, you know, they're going to make a big pass on one or the other and maybe touch wheels. So I think if they have a good grounding of a relationship going in, and then if something, you know, they are to tangle, which, in, you know, my mind, it's a matter of when, not if, that, you know, there's good rules of engagement. Don't let the media draw you into a media fight, because they like a good controversy. And let's just keep our head cool. No one's done anything intentionally. We'll sort everything out. And so I'm confident we can manage our two drivers as competitive as they are in a very healthy way.
Yeah, I've got this visual. It's like Lion King. You're the big lion standing there and you've got the two young lions. And as long as you feed them, all's going to be good, as long as you're feeding them. Yeah. Right? But, I mean, that immediately makes me go, Sainz and Leclerc. I mean, that jumps to mind as soon as you say that. I just wanted to touch on, it's a unique thing in our sport where you can make driver changes, announcements, when you've got 24 races ahead of you, like Lewis going to Ferrari. And I'm not going to draw you in, you know, I know you have to be very careful what you say, but it is very hard when you have an incumbent, right, who's going to be staying and you've got another driver leaving, from the technology knowledge, the IP knowledge. And at some point, there's got to be a divergence of just everything in the team. And I thought they handled it quite well. Their racing was wheel to wheel. I mean, rim to rim through that series of corners on Sunday. And afterwards, I know Leclerc was like, oh, you know, that was a bit rough. But actually, in public, they handled it quite well. It's inevitable, isn't it, that we're going to see more of that from especially those two?
Yeah, I think they've gone at it a few times. They went out at it Monza last year. I would expect there to be some fireworks there before the season is over. You're going to have a situation where Ferrari needs to cut off Carlos from information about next year's car. And same thing with Mercedes, with Lewis. So that'll, you know, naturally then means you're going to kind of favor the driver that's sticking around. And then you've got two drivers that are uber competitive. Carlos is still looking for a ride. Lewis is going to want to kind of prove he can get the best of George. So I'm expecting maybe some fireworks between those two teams the second half of the year, because while I think they're managing it very well, you can see by the radio chat in a few instances that it wouldn't take much for that to flare up. So I think that's a watch this space. If you told me either of the two teams' drivers kind of went at it later in the year, that wouldn't surprise me.
And you can just sit there. You've got your two drivers. You can watch it from the bird seat.
Hopefully drive between the two of them as they argue.
Yeah, exactly. It's best for your guys. Obviously, we are more mature than some of the guys we're talking about age-wise.
We're very mature.
So nicely way. But Alonso just still drives like he's a car in carts at moments, doesn't it? You go, my God, boy, that is brilliant. You're back on
it.
He's impressive. Showing you can do it into your 40s. I'm a big believer that, you know, when you look at Lewis, you see, I mean, he raced so well in the sprint race. Give him the right car, give him the right opportunity. It's important to have the balance between they're already legends racing still inside the sport against the young guys that used to watch them. How hard is it, though? You know what it involves. How hard is it for someone in their 40s, Lewis, Fernando, to perform at the top level?
I think it's definitely not easy, but you see it in other sports, and it only happens with the legends. They have a work ethic second to none. They've got a focus, a mindset. I mean, Fernando is so impressive. He's not slowing down at all. His racecraft is awesome. And, you know, I know Fernando well. He doesn't care about anything other than racing. So I think what maybe some of these, you know, quote, older guys kind of lose their way, it's because I think they start getting focused on things outside of racing. Fernando just cares about racing. And I think as long as he does that, like the Tom Brady's of the world, the Scott Dixons, they can kind of defy what everyone else does because they have a focus and a talent that allows them to go later in their career than most. So it's not going to work for everyone, but it's certainly working for Fernando Alonso. I'd have him drive our car any day.
Yeah, he's amazing. You mentioned Scott Dixon. I was actually, I made a note about it. Which IndyCar driver, as an American, which IndyCar driver do you, if you had a third car and you could just do it for, you know, it's never, nothing's just for fun, but you could just for one race, who would you have liked to have put in as an IndyCar driver? Would it be a Scott?
From the good old days, well, you know, certainly now, let's put aside my drivers because, yeah, you know, Pato's been in our Formula One car and been extremely. But if we take my guys out of it, because I'd hear from them if I didn't, I think you got to say Scott Dixon and Joseph Newgarden are huge talents. And I'm not one of those that think people are over the hill at 25 years old. So Scott, a little bit late to get into Formula One. And he probably is. But, you know, it was funny. Someone said to me Saturday night, you think Scott's kind of on the way down? It was like, I don't think so. He's won four of the last six races in what is arguably one of the most competitive, if not most competitive, form of motorsport. So he's a freak of nature in a great way, as is Fernando Alonso, the Tom Brady's. You know, you see him come from time to time. Michael Schumacher, you know, Nigel Mansell won his championship at 39. So I think it's more about mindset than physical at that age, that if you're in the right frame of mind and you take care of yourself, I think you can race into your 40s. But to answer your question, Scott Dixon and Joseph Newgarden, along with my guys, would be immense talents. Colton Herta, we've had in our cars, extremely quick. And then kind of going back to the good old days, growing up, you know, I was always Emerson Fittipaldi, Allinger Jr., Michael Andretti fan. It's a shame Michael joined us at a kind of the worst time for a rookie. There was a limit on testing. I don't think our car was great. And Formula One can be a bit brutal, that if you don't come out of the gates really strong, the pressure's on. Because I certainly think Michael had the talent to be a very successful Formula One driver.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you brought him out. He really did. He did play his role. It was, and it was just so sad for him that it didn't come together. It gave him such negative press. But I just posted some pictures on Instagram about from pictures from the RRDC, and there was a great photograph I got of Sir Jackie Stewart and Mario locked heads together, like whispering to each other. And I tagged it with was, I think I know what they're talking about at F1. Right. So, yep. So I think that's exactly the case. I mean, I don't want you to draw you into that necessarily, but I mean, he is a legend. You look at Mario and you just go there. Oh, that's a legend walking past that. I mean, literally small man legend. And I know he's a bit pissed about the situation, but what do you think down the road? Do you think we'll see them in?
You know, it's hard to tell. I mean, it's been very controversial. I mean, Andretti's such a awesome name, and you know, Mario's a legend and a good friend. GM's an awesome OEM, and Cadillac's a great brand. It's, you know, it's something that ultimately, you know, as we've all seen, Formula One and the FIA ultimately have the decision. The teams have a voice but have no vote. My general view, as long as they are additive to the to the sport. They pay the right franchise fee. They bring in the right sponsors. GM makes the right commitment to the sport and they're additive. Then we should want to grow the sport. I think there's some people that have a view that they aren't additive. And I think that's where the debate comes from. But, you know, we used to have these FIA commission meetings that used to take place in, for around the Concord Agreement in the Hilton Terminal 4 at Heathrow, where all the teams would get together. Now we tend to fly to Geneva, where we'll go to on Thursday, which we're going to start talking about the Concord. So I think it will continue to surface.
How important is it, Zach, that you're in your job, that it's not about the racing at that point? When you get together with the Totos and the Christians, I mean, it must be some pretty intense stuff, right? I mean, you're talking about billions of dollars. I mean, it must be a big business.
There's some things that we all align on, and then there's plenty of things we don't align on, and no one is shy in these FIA commission meetings. It'd be great to get Netflix in there for a real one, because it doesn't quite come to blows, but it can get pretty aggressive with each other. No, it's not a shy group.
And I'm sure Gunter Steiner is missed or not in these moments.
We all like Gunter. he wasn't one of the bigger voices in the FIA commission. He was more a bigger voice in the meeting and the paddock and the spectacle of the sport. I like Gunter a lot. I've known him for 100 years, so it's great to still see him in the paddock. So whether he continues down the media path, book writing path, or gets his own Netflix show, who knows?
Who knows? I know he'll work it. Do you think that they're back a bit onto the driver lineups and contracts? As an American, you know, most of the ball sports here have that free agent window. Do you think in Formula One that we should strive for that so it doesn't cause the Lewis situation or whatever? Do you think that's something that would work?
I think it'd be difficult to work, and I also not sure it's necessary. It's kind of part of our sport, and I think it's a fun part of the sport, and it creates headlines. I think we know people love Formula One and the sport for different reasons, but the big politics, the drama that breaks out, the Lewis going to Ferrari, people love that stuff. So I'm not sure you'd want to mute that. We have so few players, unlike other big sports. I think to regulate 20 drivers isn't really necessary.
It would be, I mean, I think to counter that, it would, I know there must be so many human moments that are very difficult inside the teams, you know, mechanics, you're looking at your driver, you're no longer with me. So I know that can't be fun for certain people, but you're right. It does create a spectacle and a little bit of chaos, which is always
but that's all part of the game, you know, right? We're all fighting for not only drivers' championships but constructors' championships, and you know, we're fighting with Ferrari, who's right ahead of us, and Mercedes, who's right behind us, and you know, we want to beat them, and a little bit of noise in their system, which may or may not play out, doesn't hurt what we're doing. We also know the shoe can be on the other foot, so you know, you just need to get ahead of it. It is awkward and a little bit unusual for something to be done so far in advance. Normally it's kind of middle of the season, but they'll manage through it. I think Toto and Lewis have a tremendous amount of respect for each other, so I think it'll be tough, but they'll play by the rules.
I'm just going to quickly talk about your job. One thing that impresses you, I use you and Roger Penske as examples when I'm talking to young people getting into business, young drivers, is that when I text you or email you, within a window of time, you get back to me. Roger Penske, a window of time, he gets back to you. Yet you're so mind-numbingly busy and such an influx of communication. Firstly, I think that's a brilliant ethic that you have. How do you manage it? And because the younger generation aren't like that, it doesn't appear. You get back to people, but you get on top of it. Can you just give us a bit of a Zach Brown how to be successful as a CEO of a racing team advice? Because it's genius.
I've got I live on my phone, as you can imagine, and I'm in constant communication. I'm probably 300-400 emails, texts, WhatsApps a day. So you can quickly get behind if you're not responding quickly. Fortunately, I've got a great leadership team, so I can also delegate and have a great couple PAs and a chief of staff. So I have a tremendous amount of resources around me. A couple kind of rules that I have that are simple, but I think important is everyone at the factory needs to acknowledge a communication they've had within 24 hours. You don't necessarily always have the answer, but if someone sends you something, at least acknowledge the email. And if it's like, hey, I'll know in a week, then that person knows I'll hear back in a week. But before I started, there'd be a lot of people that would go, I didn't respond because I didn't have an answer. Then the person on the receiving end, you know, 3-4 days later, I don't know if they got it. Am I going to come? So just acknowledge an email. If you have the answer, great. But so that's kind of rule number one. Rule number two is I don't use the term ASAP. I don't have that in my calendar. That leads to miscommunication. If I said to you, can you do that for me ASAP? You know, my ASAP and your ASAP may be different. So it's much easier to say, can you do that by Monday by 3 o'clock or Thursday by 2 o'clock? And if it's ASAP means now, that's a better description. It's now. Hey, when we get off this phone, can you go do this now? So clarity of communication. And then my other two small pet peeves, but these all lead to things flowing well, is I always date documents. You know, I get a lot of briefs, a lot of versions, and sometimes they come in, you know, a couple in the same day, and I won't be able to get to it till I'm on a plane. I'll print off three documents, get on the plane, and I can't tell which one's the most current, and you end up working on one that's not a current document, and then one that just saves a little bit of time is dating pages when you go through lots of presentations and you're talking to someone and you say, can you turn to page? What's the page after the picture on that page of that page? So those are my small little pet peeves of ways of working, but it just keeps communication flowing so I can respond quickly, precisely, and just kind of keep the ball rolling.
Brilliant. Okay, I wrote all that down. So should every young person too. Almost finally, the Miami Grand Prix forecast coming in there. What are your predictions?
I think we should be pretty good there. We've got upgrades coming. It was a track. It was our worst track last year. But after predicting China was going to be pretty poor for us and having the performance we did, you know, I don't know if we're going to be great or not in Miami. But it's usually very hot. That's not one of the strengths of our car. So that's something that last year we struggled around there. But I think we have a much better car this time than we had last time around in Miami, plus an upgraded car. So I think I see no reason why we shouldn't be pretty competitive where we've been for the first five races.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. You are now challenging with Ferrari for that top, you know, for the podium. It makes it very exciting. Before I let you go, Zach, just I wanted to say thank you for the wonderful tribute that the whole team did, I know led by you, for the De Ferran family at Bahrain. Obviously, you and I, super close to Gilles. He was my best friend. So it was, I know for Angela, Luke, and Anna, it was incredibly significant to be there. Can you just sort of share with the audience, you know, what Gilles brought to the team? I'll tell you this. He told me, it was the last time I spoke to him on the 26th. Of December, he said he was just saying how excited how much he was enjoying the McLaren thing. It was actually the professional relationship he'd been looking for quite a while. You know, it meant a lot to him.
Yeah, he's sorely missed as a friend and as a racer in our team. He worked very closely with all of us. I think a lot of people may not know how technical he was. He wasn't, you know, designing parts of the car, but he was bringing the technical organization together to help get the most out of them. I give him a lot of credit for our win in 21 because he was with us in 19 with Pete Prodromo and Andrea Stella, who developed that car, which then was our 20 car. And our 21 car, because of COVID, was our 20 car with a Mercedes in the back of it. We had to use our tokens. So I can trace back our victory in 21 to Gilles' time when he started with us here the first time in 19. I've never heard anyone have a bad word around about Gilles Deferrin, which is pretty rare in this sport. He was a racer. He was a champion. He was a team owner. He was a driver. He was a sporting director. He was the complete guy and sorely missed. And that's that helmet you can see behind my shoulder right there is one Gilles gave me. That's his helmet from when he was racing in IndyCar. So he's always very, very close to us.
Thank you for saying that. Zach, I will catch up with you down the road. I'm probably going to be in Austin, so I'll see you there. Thank you so much for joining us. This was really great. I really enjoyed it.
My pleasure. Love chatting racing.
Thanks, buddy. You don't need to go 200 miles an hour to outrun your inbox or pull multiple G's around corners just to decline a phone call. You don't have someone waving a yellow flag to tell you to slow down and look around. Basically, you don't need to be a professional race car driver to disconnect and break free. All you have to do is drive. Mobile One for the love of driving. Visit loveofdriving.us/drive to win to learn more. Well, next up, of course, is the Miami Grand Prix in just about 10 days. Another sprint format weekend. It means there's a lot less time on track for the teams and drivers to work through any upgrades. We see quite a few of the teams bringing those. We just heard from Zach. They're going to bring some. It's exciting times. I think with all the simulations and everything, they pretty much know what it's going to do for the car. But of course, until the rubber meets the road, there's no way of truly telling. That's all simulation up to that point. Will the Ferrari duo continue to push each other in that battle for top dog? I really hope so, because science is still out there promoting his wares to the world. I think we've got the opportunity for Lando to build on that confidence. As I said, it is a street circuit. It produced some good racing over the past. But mark my words, all through 2nd to 10th, it's going to ramp up going in. Anyway, I look forward to seeing you. Follow us along on social media. Thank you so much to the Wynn Las Vegas for providing this beautiful studio and home for the show, and of course to Mobile One for the love of driving. See you soon.